people who love them.
Hey, this is The Thing About Cars, coming to you from Strongbox West in Atlanta. It's a somewhat rainy day.
But that wasn't expected. It wasn't supposed to rain until much later today.
Right, right.
So you guys rode, did you get rained on?
Yeah, oh yeah.
But you're in your car.
Yeah, I'm in the car.
Okay, but you guys got rained on.
Yeah.
I had a couple pockets of rain.
Yep.
All right, so this is, as Ben has already said, we're back doing episode 2 of our motorcycle series here. I'm Mickey, and around the table we have...
Tom.
Misty.
And Ben.
And we're going to jump right into these questions, I think. But, well, maybe we won't jump right in. Maybe I'll start off with trivia and we'll end them at the end of the episode this time. So this first question gets answered pretty quickly. And the second question tags to the second one. So I'll ask them both in tandem. In which country was the first motorcycle invented? Was it Germany, the UK, Japan, or Norway? Think about that for half a second. Anybody have a guess? Ben can see the answer, so he's cheating.
Actually, I can't read it from here, but I have a pretty good guess.
You have a pretty good guess?
Yeah.
Tom, you want to take a guess?
Give me the four again.
Sure. In which country was the first motorcycle invented? Germany, the UK, Japan, or Norway? And this, I think, is making the assumption gas-powered, petrol-powered.
Petrol-powered.
Yeah.
I'm not sure, but I'm going to guess England.
You're going to guess
the
England?
UK.
That's an interesting guess. Misty?
Germany.
Germany?
Germany.
Germany is the correct answer.
All right.
So, the first gas-powered one, I think there was a steam-powered one that had existed in France before gas power, you know, made a lot more sense to put, you know, on two wheels. But the second question, which tags onto the first one, and we will answer this one at the end of the episode, is what was the first internal combustion gas-fueled motorcycle? Was it the BMW R32, the Daimler Reitwagen, the Zündapp Z22, or the Hercules Wankel? And I still have one more question if we do an episode 3. In fact, let's just ask it. And if we need to push it to episode 3, I'll do the edit and we'll move it to that episode. So this last question is, what was the first production motorcycle in the U.S.? Was it an Indian Single made by the Indian Motorcycle Manufacturing Company? Was it a 1901 Harley Davidson, which had no model name? Was it the Orient Aster made by a company called Metz? Or was it the Cleveland, which had a 221cc engine? And I'm thinking the company was Cleveland. But that's what I've got. Save that answer. Don't answer yet. Let's go to Eric's questions. Eric's had three questions that we mentioned in the last episode. The first one was, what are your thoughts on Harley-Davidson? With their core buyers aging out, what can they do, if anything, to get younger buyers? What do you guys think? Is Harley-Davidson aging out? Is that true?
I don't think so. I mean...
Well, they make a nice t-shirt.
yes, they do.
It's a style of bike that I don't ride as too, but they're starting to do things. Yeah, I think, you know, they make the same style of bike that they've made for 30 years. Not a bad thing. That's what the people want, and it's a wonderful bike. They make a ton of them. The largest manufacturer in the U.S. They're starting to get though some other bikes in their pipeline. They just released their Livewire, the first mass production electric bike, other than Zero Company that makes an electric and Energica from Italy. But that's a big direction. They do have a small roadster type bike that's in the works for the next year or two, and an adventure style bike similar to the GS that Ben and I ride. So they're branching out, or at least trying to.
Sounds like they're experimenting.
Yeah, I think the electric, if they can get the price point on the electric, good. Because right now it's looking like it's going to be about $30,000. But if they can get the price point on the electric in more manageable territory, then I think that's got some real potential. But as far as the old traditional, you know, Born to Be Wild style, I mean, yeah, the sales have been a little weak on that lately.
Well, I mean, the Born to Be Wild culture itself is certainly getting older, right? The younger generation doesn't have any of that. Those cultural pinnings that defined that era.
Right.
You know, now we're defined by something else. It's not Steppenwolf. It's not, you know.
Well, and they're a premium brand. Mm-hmm. So industry-wide, year over year for the last 2 years, they have decreased their U.S. sales. And it's also, it's a premium brand. So say to get younger riders in, well, they're not going to buy a $15,000, $20,000, even $30,000 right. Harley Davidson. They're just starting off with their lives. They don't have that ability.
Now, there's also so much saturation in that market segment that even the used ones aren't selling very well. In fact, I have a friend who wound up taking a 2008 Harley in a trade for an old Mustang, of all things. And he really felt like a sucker because he couldn't give that Harley away. He eventually sold it to a guy in Germany.
Wow.
But the market for that cruiser style, as it's often known, is just so saturated in the United States that there's more supply than demand right now.
Right.
But Germans will buy your used Harleys because even used ones over there are ridiculously expensive.
Well, and to Eric's question, what can Harley do to get younger buyers? I think Tom sort of nailed it. You know, if you're talking about a premium motorcycle company, you need to have an entry level for younger drivers
that's one of BMW's problems too. I've been on the board of directors of the BMW Motorcycle Owners of America. It's been a few years, but I served in the club's top leadership, and we were saying, well, the club seems to be aging. You know, the average age of the member at the time was 53 or something, and it's older now. And I said, well, how do we get younger members? And somebody said, well, BMW needs to make a bike that younger people can, one, afford, and two, desire.
Right.
And they're starting to now. But for a while, they weren't.
Misty, you've been quiet throughout the whole thing. You don't have an interest in Harleys or...
I mean, my husband owns one, so yeah. I mean, I'm forced to kind of like it. But I think it stems in also, is it Eric, who mm-hmm. had the second question about, you know, why do we not see millennials riding them? And mm-hmm. I think that that's... I'm a mom of a 21-year-old turning 22 this month, and he asks me all the time, I want a bike, I want a bike, I want a bike. And I'm like, first of all, I'm not... in Atlanta traffic, you've been driving for what, 5-6 maybe years? Mm-hmm. Maybe. I'm not going to spend $20,000-$30,000 on a bike and crotch rockets, forget it. Mm-hmm. And then what, to have your brain splattered all over the cement because people around here don't pay attention? So as a parent, I ictionay that. You know, it's like, no way, I'm not letting you buy a bike.
Hmm.
And he doesn't even live in my household.
So wait a minute.
So I'm like Ben's mom.
Right. But okay, so I got to say this, forgive me. Isn't that kind of hypocritical? You ride avidly and you don't want your son to do it.
Completely, because what comes out of his mouth is, well, you and dad ride. And what comes with riding is also learning how other people drive on their road. So I've been driving I'm not going to say my age, but for quite a while. And I know what other drivers do. So defensive driving wise, I know what to expect. You have a brand new driver on the road, let alone a boy, kid. He's just thinking about where I got to go, what am I doing. He's not looking ahead to see what's going to happen. Being smart enough to be able to say, I know that guy's going to come over on me. I can see it because he's not stopping. They don't think about that. So for me as a parent, you know, I look at that and go, well, there's $30,000 down the drain. And, you know, that's not so, my son's, you know, welfare is just.
Your decision is based on your knowing your son,
well,
the bike, right? I mean, I don't want to say bad things about your child, but.
I mean, he's a pretty responsible driver.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the general population, mm-hmm. like we talked in the last episode. They're not, especially in Atlanta, they're going and working while they're driving and they're on their phones or, like Tom said, eating a cheeseburger or, I mean, I've even seen people read books
mm-hmm.
where I'm like, is that person really reading a book right now while they're driving in 85 traffic? Like, seriously, is this happening?
Right.
And so they're just, the reality is they don't pay attention. And so, you know, as a younger driver,
Without the experience.
Yeah, having them putting on a bike, which is already dangerous, I kind of feel...
But at least he has an interest.
Huge.
I'm at the opposite end. So my son's also a millennial. He's at 25, has absolutely zero interest in motorcycles whatsoever. He's a road biker, bicycle, but has no interest in motorcycles. As he was growing up, I've offered to take him on rides, but that wasn't the cool thing to ride on the back with your father, or even, you know, teach him, but zero interest and probably never will.
Ben, you've been chomping at the bit for a while here.
Oh, sorry. Well, that's okay if not everybody does. It really isn't for everybody, but, you know, just some quick thoughts. I saw a really funny Facebook meme a while back that shows a little toddler, you know, kind of messing with one of those little tiny little pocket bikes, and the caption said, get them interested in motorcycles. They'll never have money for drugs.
Right.
But then another one is with some of the generations coming up now, I don't think they've got the spare cash to get into it. Even if they buy a used bike, you know, for peanuts, there's still the gear, the training, there's the maintenance, the insurance is horrendous, especially for young folks.
Yeah.
It's not cheap to ride. And I hear all these stories about the generations coming up now who are very short on disposable income.
Which makes me have to ask, you know, Atlanta has, for lack of a better description, a street gang of people who are riding dirt bikes and ATVs throughout the streets and just creating havoc for the rest of us that just want to live here. Are those guys not insured? Are those guys?
Probably not.
I know, so I do ride with some younger folks, and yeah, their insurance is through the roof at times. It's based, though, on the type of bike you're riding and the size of it. So that goes in line with it. But there, it's not outlandish for 20-year-olds to ride. I mean, yes, there are entry-level bikes, both new and the used market is tremendous for them. But, you know, outside of the bike, you have to factor in a budget for proper gear. You know, don't go out in t-shirt and shorts. So that's one thing that we promote quite a bit. And the groups that I ride with, I promote quite a bit. So it is an investment. You have to want to really get into it. But I think it's more millennials are that would get into it, maybe grew up with it. You know, it was a family friend or an uncle or somewhere in the family that rode. And so that's where they were interested.
Yeah. My 10-year-old, I have a 10-year-old currently today and he rides with us. He will only ride with my husband, though, because he's a much better driver than I am. But we only take him out for maybe an hour. Usually by an hour, he's usually falling asleep on the back. So we only have a small window with him. But he's always been into him, just like my oldest. He's always ridden with us, and we usually take the back roads when we do those. Mama's on the far right hand, just making sure everybody stays away.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oh, insurance. So, all right, you're looking at an industry of people who make and sell motorcycles, and you know, they obviously want to see more people on their bikes, right, on their motorcycles. On the other hand, you have a completely separate industry which seems sort of at odds with that. It's just the insurance industry. It's like the cost of getting the insurance you need to, you know, be proper on your bike is cost prohibitive. Then doesn't that kill the ability for young folks to get into riding? And I may not be asking the right question here. Help me out here. But doesn't insurance seem, I mean, on the one hand, you need it. On the other hand, if you can't afford it, then how then do younger drivers get to ride? And should we take the insurance industry to task and say, stop being so greedy or something like that? I don't know.
I really don't think it's any different than car insurance. If you are trying to insure your car and you're an under 25 driver, you're going to pay premium rates well above if you have an accident or anything, you know, and you're young. That's where the demographics are. So I don't feel that insurance is an impetus to people riding. I think it's more of desire. Here in Atlanta, the traffic, it's bad enough in a car, much less on a bike. And you have to approach it with an open mind. It is more dangerous than riding a car, but it's a hell of a lot more fun at times.
Oh, yeah. And if you take those safety courses, a lot of insurance companies will give you a discount.
Okay, yeah, I guess that does make sense.
It's not a gigantic discount, right, but every little bit helps.
I admit it. I have a knee-jerk reaction when it comes to talking about insurance companies. I have this weird notion that they should not be profit-making entities, but that's a discussion for another day. And I don't mean to say, you know, that it should be a socialistic enterprise or something like that. I still think, you know, anyway, like I said, that's a discussion for another day.
Right.
I'll just shut up. I wanted to ask you guys about prejudice in the world of riding, because my friend Jay, he rides a Yamaha, I believe, and his wife drives a Can-Am, and he says that people won't talk to her, but they will talk to him, or that the two-wheel people don't talk to the three-wheel people, and even then, Harley riders seem to be more snobby than the non-Harley riders. Is any of this true? And if it is true, how bad is it?
Well, I think it varies, you know, from person to person and place to place.
But in general?
I don't think it's that bad overall.
I ride with someone who rides a Can-Am. You know, he goes everywhere and as fast or as out on any of the roads that we do on two wheels by his choice. Do we treat him any different? Absolutely not. Do I know other riders and other groups that, well, that's not a motorcycle, so I don't give it the respect. I ride a scooter. I understand. When I'm on my scooter, I don't get that respect either.
One little thing I'll put out here for those who don't ride. There's what's called the wave. You may have seen this. Motorcyclists generally wave at each other.
Yes.
And there are a lot of jokes and things and snobbery things about that. But I wave to everybody, including the scooters.
Thank you.
So,
I wave to everybody too.
Yeah.
I think the majority of most people don't have prejudice about it.
Yeah.
Those motorcycles, and I call them motorcycles, even though they have three wheels, they've helped more people that can't get on two wheels, people with, handicap, legs that are missing and that still want to ride. And, they allow for the like of riding motorcycles for them to be involved in it still. So,
Them on the road, it can't be a bad thing.
Yeah, and they get the two-hand wave,
And there's so many versions of three wheels. You can do the two in front on the Can-Am. You can do the two in the rear trike style, and then there's sidecars.
Well, okay, so, right, sidecars being one other thing. What is that I'm seeing on the road, a slingshot?
That's a car.
That's a car.
That's a car. Right. Yeah.
You got a steering wheel. You got pedals. Yeah. You got a hand shifter. No.
Right.
There is nothing that it's. There's a now a new classification called an auto cycle, but it's there is nothing that has motorcycle in it.
Right. Yeah.
I think to me the slingshot has more in common with a Reliant Robin than it does with a Harley.
You're right. A three-wheeled car for sure. Okay, so, I know that, and I'm sure that the prejudice thing happens more in groups than it does between individuals,
And there's a lot of kind of humor and good-natured ribbing there, too, if you go on the internet, you can find some great humor, these top 10 lists I've seen in a lot of forums, top 10 reasons why BMW riders don't wave back or why Goldwing riders don't wave back, and they're hilarious to read. They've all got little grains of truth in them, but they're just fun. They're not trying to insult anybody, seriously.
Well, this will tell you how far removed I am. I didn't know that Goldwing was still a thing.
Oh, yeah.
Huh.
They just brought out a new version, in fact, that's getting a little bit of derision for maybe not quite hitting the mark. They made it a little smaller and a little sportier.
Yeah, I did not know. Yeah. Eric's last question. Let's tackle that one. He says, "What are your thoughts on electric motorcycles in general?" Ben's already sort of touched on this that, electric bikes shouldn't cost $30,000 to get into. What do you think, Misty?
Well, I don't know if I really have an opinion about that. Mm-hmm. I mean, I already ride in the HOV lane for free, and I know I didn't pay $30,000 for my bike. But, when you're talking about, what is it doing for the, economics or what's the word, the environment,
mm-hmm.
If it's better for the environment, I mean, people are really into that right now. I mean, maybe that's where you get the kids.
I think it's growing. I think electric bikes are the future of motorcycling.
Sure.
There's a couple of manufacturers, Zero Motorcycles, who makes motorcycles exclusively. There's an Italian brand, Energica. Harley now has just entered in with their electric motorcycle. BMW makes an electric scooter. Vespa just came out with their own electric scooter. So I'm an electric fan. I drove an electric car for 5 years, so I understand the piece of it. The infrastructure has not caught up with the technology yet.
That's
the main deterrent, is everybody's focused on the range of the bike. You can't get around it. It's finite. It's about 100 or so miles is where all the technologies are these days.
Right.
The price point will come down as the volume increases, but the infrastructure has to be there to make it really viable.
I think the techiness of it is one of the things that may attract some younger folks to them.
Mm-hmm.
The range thing, I mean, you've only got so much space and weight capacity to work with on a motorcycle for batteries. Some of them come with built-in chargers. Some of them come with optional extra batteries. In fact, Zero has one that I think with most of their models, you've got a choice. You can go for the built-in charger or you can go for the extra battery capacity, but you can't do both because they live in the same spot on the bike.
Yeah,
and that's their one downfall. The one great thing that Harley did was on their live wire bike, they put in a level 3 charger on the bike.
Oh, yeah.
So a DC fast charge. So that means they can go into a participating Harley dealership with a that has a DC fast charge and recharge your bike from near zero to full in about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
I haven't seen one that's been loud yet. Have you guys seen one? I mean, the whole point of owning a Harley is like, you know, you get it's like you hear this, you're like, is that really a bike?
I mean, unique thing that I read about Harley, though, was that they built in some into the gearing of the electric bike for it to make some noise so that there would be some noise to it, because typically an electric bike has no noise whatsoever.
See, the lack of noise is the part about it that kind of excites me, you know, where all you hear is the world around you.
Stealth bike for Ben.
Or it's on your phone that you can make it have any noise that you want. You know, imagine that your electric bike, you bring it up, it's a TIE fighter. So I wanted to make that noise as I'm going down the road.
But Misty's right. How safe is that?
How safe is that? I mean, one of the things that I like that my bike is loud is the fact that it kind of maybe if somebody's doesn't have their radio station, you know, blaring is, oh, okay, I hear one. Where is it, right? You got no sound. That's just opens up maybe.
That's a whole other conversation on loud pipe save lives. And not in that camp, but
I'm not either.
No, I don't see that as a problem. I've never been seen anybody react to the noise.
Stealth fighters and stealth planes carry a transponder so they can be found. You know, if you're riding a now very quiet stealth bike, doesn't it make some sense to have an audible warning somehow?
Well, cars are so sound deadened these days too. That's just not the right approach. Visibility probably helps you a little more.
Okay.
Well, when I owned the electric car, it did beep when we went in reverse, so you know, we wouldn't run over people.
Okay, very cool. All right, so our first trivia question was, in which country was the first motorcycle invented? And the answer was Germany. That is correct. The second half of that question is, what was the first internal combustion gas-fueled motorcycle, obviously made by a German company? So the four German bikes we have listed here, very old bikes, are the BMW R32, the Daimler Reitwagen, the Zündapp Z22, or the Hercules Wankel, which actually, no, I'm not going to say anything about the Wankel. Anyway, what do you guys think is the...
I just love the name of the Zündapp 22.
Zündapp 22.
I'm going to have to go with Tom.
With that? Yep, Ben?
I think it was the Daimler.
It was, in fact, the Daimler. Mm-hmm. Ben's 2 for 2 on this particular question. So other two-wheel motorcycles did precede it, but the Reitwagen, which translates to riding car, is widely recognized as the first petrol internal combustion engine motorcycle made by the German inventors Gottlieb Daimler and Wilhelm Maybach in a city called Bad Cannstatt. I think I'm pronouncing that correctly. I hope.
Sounds about right.
Our friend Matt can probably do that better than I can.
You mean God.
Right.
And it was really kind of primitive as motorcycles go. I've seen a replica of it in a museum in Germany. It had a wooden frame and iron wheels. It didn't even lean into turns. It had little training wheels.
Yeah, exactly. That's what they say. So it was made in 1885. So 1885 is quite a long time ago.
And it's too bad we're not on TV, because I actually have the BMW R32 on my shirt. It was BMW's first bike, which came out in 1923.
Okay.
Well before they started making cars.
Yes. So.
Anyway, to wrap this up, Daimler is often referred to as the father of the motorcycle for this invention. The Hercules Wankel, on the other hand, I had a little bit of trivia about that particular bike, did in fact have a single rotor air-cooled 294cc rotary engine. It only produced about 25 to 27 horsepower, depending on the model year. And that, I just think, is kind of...
It wasn't the only one with that engine, either.
Really?
There was, in the 70s, there was the Suzuki RE5, which was a commercial failure but is highly collectible today. And there was also a rotary-engined Norton in the 70s.
I saw a picture of it. I mean, it's vastly different than any of the other piston-driven engines, right? It's just...
Yeah, well, like I haven't seen that one, but the Suzuki and the Norton, you know, the engine just kind of looks like a big metallic cylinder with, you know, air intake fins on the front.
Yeah.
And, but the rest of the bike looks pretty conventional.
The information I said that for the 1974 and 75 models. I don't know why they were doing this. I guess Hercules Wankel isn't really that old. It said engine lubrication was manually adding oil to the fuel tank, like a two-cycle.
Like a two-stroke.
Yeah. But from 1975 on, there was a separate oil tank with a pump. So anyway, that's our trivia moment for the day.
Right.
Tom, if people want to find out how to take the course, where do they find it?
Head to msf-usa.org.
How much does it cost?
It's about $250 for the weekend, the BRC Basic Rider Course.
Okay. Not a bad way to just get everything you need to know in one go.
It's a great way to start your motorcycle career.
And speaking of what it costs, a little plug I'll put out here, the BMW Club has a foundation that can actually give scholarships that will defray some of this cost. I think it's only available to club members right now, but up to $250 a year of training expenses can be reimbursed through these scholarships.
My serious question for you is, can they sponsor the thing about cars?
That would be nice. I actually know some of the guys on their board. I can ask.
If they'll sponsor these three episodes, I mean, hey, that'll be great. Misty, any parting words of advice? Just have fun, be safe.
Yeah, have fun, be safe out there.
All right, cool. Thank you for joining us. I'm going to let Ben take us out.
Well, this has been The Thing About Motorcycles, which is usually the thing about cars. Coming to you from Strongbox West in Atlanta. And everybody, be safe out there.
See ya.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.